I was going to actually have a, well, tomorrow tape today, but I decided to change my mind basically because of what's been going on this past week. I mean, what has been going on in the financial markets this past week is something which is unprecedented. It's unprecedented chaos, quite frankly. And yet, you know, you ask the question, well, why? What is that in fact going on? Why is it going on? And so what I thought I might do today is, rather than give just a news analysis on the subject, I think we'll go into it in a little bit more detail, if I can get this out of my notes here. I've got a tag going through my notes on the corner, I couldn't get it out. Okay, I'd like to go through it in a little bit more detail and perhaps look at some scriptures as well, so it takes a little bit longer. So it'll all be almost like a short sermon, a long sermonette that I give on the subject, or a longer than normal news analysis on the subject. But it has been an unprecedented time of chaos in this past week or more. And I was reading an article from The Plain Truth of February 1980 that Mr. Armstrong wrote on preparing to reduce our standard of living. And in that article, right at the very end, he starts to really lay out the problems that we are about to face. Now, okay, this was several years ago, but the problems remain the same. And when you look at the fact that 1,000 years to God is as a day, this isn't a very long time from when this was written, even though it's 20 years or more. You're looking at something which is not, which is certainly right bang up to date. But he says, in, under the heading that says, "Now prophesied for us," it says, "The United States and the British people did inherit the national and material promises of the birthright promised unconditionally to Abraham." If you remember, there was the birthright promises and the scepter as well. The scepter went to the Jews, but the birthright went to Israel. And the name of Israel was then passed to Ephraim and Manasseh. It says, "Therefore God has fulfilled his unconditional promise of the birthright to Abraham. Once fulfilled in the British and Americans, retention of it by us became conditional on our performance." So once he's actually fulfilled the promises, which has actually been taken place already in the prosperity that we've had and the kind of life that we've been given, now it's conditional. He says, "And what have we done with all the vast wealth, economic prosperity, and world power? We've made physical science the new Messiah, our false God, which boasted that we no longer needed to wear the swaddling clothes of superstition or lean to the crutch of religion. Science promised to deliver us from our troubles, but it failed utterly and only produced the weapons of mass destruction that can now erase all humanity from the earth. Our educational systems worship at the shrine of the false god of evolution." And this really does form a heart and core, and we need to make note of this very, very much, because that is where the education of the people in the financial markets has come from. And that's very significant. "So our educational system worships at the shrine of the false god of evolution, making it the foundational approach and basic conception upon which all knowledge is based. Evolution is the atheist attempt at explanation at the presence of a creation without a creator. Our governments have been corrupt. Our business, industrial, economic and commercial systems have been shot through with deception, dishonesty and selfishness. We've adopted the way of life of Satan, which is utter selfishness, lust and greed, envy and jealousy, competition in every walk of life, business, politics, sport, society, leading to violence and destruction. We've rebelled against the authority of God over us, worshipping the false gods of science, evolution and greed. We've gone the way of Satan, and Satan is the god of this world," as it says in 2 Corinthians 4:4. "And now for our own good, an all-wise and an all-loving God is about to punish our nations in order finally to bring us to him." Now that's what was written by Mr. Armstrong back, as I said, it was February 1980 in The Plain Truth at that time. And what we're seeing today is something, you know, really along those lines. We're looking at the results of a certain way of life, a certain society. The society has gone in a certain direction, and what we're looking at is the result of that direction. However, in the paper this morning, we have this headline, which is "The Big Bounce." In other words, it says the shares roar back on Freaky Friday after a week of turmoil. The stock market recorded the biggest one-day increase in its history yesterday, after one of the most turbulent weeks on the financial world has ever experienced. Share prices across the globe rose sharply in value after governments stepped in to end the turmoil in the past 5 days. Millions of people saw the value of their savings and pensions rise as the FTSE 100 index of British biggest companies rose by almost 9%, recovering most of the week's losses amid frenzied trading. The index closed the day at 5,311, up 8.84%, the equivalent of £102 billion. It was the biggest ever rise, surpassing the 7.8% of October the 21st, following Black Monday. And it goes on and describes more about the actual crisis itself. So when you read something like that, you think, okay, right, we're back. It's the way we're back to where it was before. Everything is going to go on just the same as it always has done. The government has actually figured the solution out. All it has to do is has this bad bank, puts the bad bank over here, dumps all these bonds and things that have got all this credit, which is no good anymore, puts it all in the bad bank, and everybody else can therefore trade in safety, and therefore the shares rose and everything's going just the way as it always has done. Now, the question is, well, is it all over? Is it all okay? And it's interesting that when you're looking at the scale of what the government is actually taking on in America, there was an article called Capitalism, It's Painful But It Works. This is by Jeff Randall in the Telegraph. And I happened to notice underneath somebody who had done a little bit of reading, a little bit of research, posted a comment. And from this comment, he's actually quoting from a book by George Soros, the hedge fund guru, or the man who broke the Bank of England for catalysing Sterling's exit from the ERM. So in other words, he was able to make an awful lot of money by foreseeing what the market was doing. And it says, I was prompted, he says, to read his book about a month ago called The New Paradigm for Financial Markets, The Credit Crisis of 2008 and What It Means. So it's right bang up to date with what in fact is happening today and the credit crisis of today. And he says, this individual says, look, I'm not an economist, I'm not a banker, I don't have shares, I don't work in the finances, but I'm just basically reading and looking at what in fact is being said. And he makes the following comment. He says, we're all now familiar with the clever products such as the CDOs. Now, the CDO is a collateralized debt obligation. In other words, where you take all these different debts and you put them all together in one instrument, and then you sell that instrument on, an instrument being a kind of piece of paper, basically, giving all these debts. And these are sold on, and they were sold until you couldn't trace where the actual original debt was coming from. And in amongst all the debt that was all conglomerated together were certain subprimes which were anything but good, and therefore the interest rate on them was not going to be realised at all. But he says, we're all familiar with the clever products of the CDOs which gave lead to the subprime collapse. But this refers to an even more exotic product, which is not specifically referred to in your column. And that is the credit default swap, the CDS. Now, the CDS is, and it says, which is potentially a far larger problem than the CDOs. If my understanding is correct, it's perhaps significant that Lehman's was allowed to go to the wall, but the Fed had to support the AIG because it represents huge systemic risk to the rest of the banking system. If the next part of this unfolding crisis is going to be the unravelling of CDSs, then the prospects and scales are truly terrifying. I'd like to quote from Soros' book an extract from pages 18 to 19, and here he starts to quote. He says, hedge funds entered the market in force in the early 2000s. Specialised credit hedge funds effectively acted as unlicensed insurance companies, collecting premiums on the CDOs. The CDOs is the collateralised debt obligations, and other securities that they insured. So there was all these collective debts that they had insurance on them. The value of the insurance was questionable because contracts could be signed without notifying the counterparties, and there was all the different people underneath. The market grew exponentially until it came to overshadow all other markets in nominal terms. The estimated nominal value of CDS contracts, this is the credit default swap, in other words, you're insuring this risk, the ones that are assuring the risk, The estimated nominal value of the CDS contracts outstanding is 42.6 trillion. Now, when you understand this, it says, to put matters in perspective, this is equal to almost the entire household wealth of the United States. So all of you in the United States, everything you own and everything everybody else owns in the entirety of the United States amounts to something around the 42.6 trillion. Now, this is what the government has then said, well, we'll have this bad bank. Oh, we'll just throw everything in there. Can they honestly support that? It says the capitalization of the US stock market is only 18.5 trillion, the entire stock market capitalization. And the US Treasuries market is only 4.5 trillion. But this is a 42.6 trillion potential. Now, obviously, we think that it wouldn't actually go down the tubes in that way. But what we're looking at, when we look at this kind of big bounce back that's occurred, and we see headlines like this saying that, oh, the stock market is back and everybody's trading and everything's inky-dory, the scale of the problem doesn't seem to have sunk in. The scale of the problem is huge. And the idea, yes, it's like, I liken it to immunity. In other words, when you have an immune system in a body, the immune system starts with the outside of the skin, or in the actual saliva of the mouth, or in the back, in the nose itself, the hairs in the nose, and then it goes to the tonsils, it goes to the blood supply, it goes in progressive stages until it gets into the blood supply and the actual body itself. But then people go ahead and give injections, and they bypass all the immunities, and they ram something into a child's blood supply going straight into the very heart and core. And then when you're looking at this, you're looking at all the various safeguards that have been in the system. They didn't work. So what they're doing is they're ramming something. Look, here is the heart and core. This is the actual foundation of America itself. And it's the people of America themselves that are ensuring these gargantuan losses, or putting the entire nation in hock to these gargantuan losses. Now, what it all means, I'm not an economist, but I would imagine that the sanctity of the dollar is very in great jeopardy. And that, you know, you can either save the stock market, I remember reading one time, or you can save the dollar. You can't save both. They've chosen to save the stock market, so the dollar eventually will burn. The value of dollars around the world will just disintegrate, and inflation will have a huge effect around the world. But you see, again, Mr. Armstrong said, look, the problems are spiritual. It's not a case of, you know, putting in these physical solutions to these spiritual problems. The physical solutions are not going to work. And what we really need to understand is a little bit more about what has changed. Now, I saw an article while this was raging. It was on a comment and features, and it was I think this is the one, who's writing here? Gordon Rayner reported here, and just gave a comment about the Halifax, HBOS, Halifax Bank of Scotland. Now, that basically was about to go to the wall. The government then stepped in and allowed a Lloyds TSB to take over HBOS, and thereby save the HBOS from going to the wall. Now, HBOS, based with Halifax particularly, it has the vast majority, I think, of all mortgages in the entire country. And if it went to the wall, the repercussions were huge, because you've got savers who are investing in the company as well. And it is a very prominent company within the UK. He says, from the moment that Andy Hornby was appointed chief executive of HBOS in 2005, at the ridiculously young age of 38, so he was head of this huge company of HBOS, Halifax Bank of Scotland, at age of 38, he had never ever seen anything like what we've witnessing today at all, nothing at all. And remember, this Halifax was not a bank. It's Halifax Bank of Scotland, which is a bank now, but it was not a bank. Halifax was a building society, and we'll go on and discuss a little bit more about that. But it's a very different animal from a bank, and the way of funding is very different from a bank. But he says, at the ridiculously young age of 38, The city had been in love with a handsome Oxford graduate who even the stuffiest old stodgers referred to as the, quote, the boy wonder of banking. His energy, his dash and aggression, coupled with marketing skills learned through the previous job at Asda. So where did he learn his trade? He learned it at Asda, the selling in the supermarket. Asda is basically, I think it's actually part of Walmart. So he learned his trade in banking at Walmart. He puts it in perspective. It says, drove a seemingly unstoppable expansion program during which HBOS borrowed heavily so that it could gobble up customers from its more cautious rivals. Now, this is what a bank can do, whereas a building society can't. A building society gets money in as savers, uses that money, and lends it out to borrowers. That's a building society. But a bank, yes, it gets money in from savers, but it also goes to the markets and borrows money and then lends the borrowed money to people who need mortgages or whatever else they need money for. Now, that's what a bank can do. Therefore, if they all come back and say, oh, these mortgages are subprime and therefore the value goes down, it's what actually happens? The entire bank suffers, basically. And also, if the credit dries up, then they can't make the loans either. It says, Andy Hornby is a superstar, raved the city analyst, Dresda, Kleinworth and Wasserstein, I think it is, in a breathless note to investors 2 years ago, which pointed out that he, quote, deserves the most of the credit, unquote, for HBOS's success, unquote, and he's good looking, he added for good measure. Meanwhile, commentators were rather less complimentary about Eric Daniels, the self-confessed, quote, invisible man, unquote, at the helm of Lloyds TSB, who refused to take risks with the company's money, even if that meant losing market share to HBOS. His preference for, quote, organic growth, unquote, rather than innovation seemed outmoded. Traders unkindly characterized Daniels as, quote, boring, unquote, and referred to Lloyds as a plodding shire horse, parodying the thoroughbred stallion of its famous logo. Not anymore. All of a sudden, the grey-haired Daniels at 57, who has spent his entire working life in banking, is being hailed as the wise old man of finance. Andy Hornby's confidence now seems like hubris, and the tortoise has beaten the hare. So here was somebody who was trained in banking, who knows that things go up and things go down, and had a helm on it, had his hand on the tiller on the helm, whereas somebody else trained in Asda, who would make a quick profit, make your turnover is all important. You've got these two philosophies. And when something happens, which is what we were looking at here, then we were looking at these two philosophies. It's very clear what actually happened when Lloyds TSB had to take over HBOS. It says HBOS has been caught with its pants down because, like Northern Rock, it borrowed heavily from other banks and institutions to fund new mortgages, meaning it was effectively lending out other people's money rather than lending money deposited by savers. That was the problem. The wheels of the HBOS wagon finally came loose on the money from other banks when the money from other banks dried up in the credit crunch, leaving HBOS with a reported £198 billion cash overflow. That's about a $400 billion overflow problem. He says, even though HBOS is Britain's biggest saving institution with £258 billion in deposits, city traders have seized on its apparent weakness to drive down share prices to the point where it may have no option to accept a takeover bid. He says, how much simpler things were when a handful of Yorkshiremen sat round a table in the Oak Room and the Old Cock Inn in Halifax in December 1852. And this is what I want you to understand. This is how it started. And here is the contrast between the two. One is a building society based on solid principles. The other is a bank based on the principles of Asda and Walmart and quick turnover. And it says that when they gathered together in the Oak Room of the Old Cock Inn in Halifax in December 1852 to discuss the establishment of an investment and loan society to help local mill workers build houses for themselves. Anyone with spare cash could invest it, and others could then borrow from the fund to buy a house. Savers would get interest, borrowers would pay it. It's a safe bet that terms like liquidity crisis, subprime, and short selling didn't crop up as they supped their pints of bitter. It was nothing to do with it. It's completely different. It was a simple, basic, fundamental system. And the point is, and we need to understand, is these were God-fearing men. This is the difference. We're in a society and a culture where the education system has changed from something which was God-fearing to something which totally denies the existence of God. And therefore, the kind of people that are being produced from this education system are a different kind of person. Their belief system is based on survival of the fittest. And he goes on, he says, their plans were so straightforward that just days later they formally established the Halifax Permanent Benefice Building Society, and on May 26, 1853, Esau Hansen, a textile manufacturer, was granted its first mortgage. He then borrowed £121, and the Halifax was an immediate success with four branches open within a year. By 1913, it had assets of £3 million and was the biggest building society in the world, a position that it held for the rest of the 20th century. That's how big this, or how established this particular company was, and what a devastating problem occurred when, you know, it had to be bailed out. Again, but what happened is that it emerged with the Bank of Scotland, it became a bank, it left its building society roots, and it had the kind of philosophy that was engendered initially through Walmart and Tesco and Asda in this particular case, of the supermarket, which is rapid turnover. And it just simply didn't work. Turn over to Romans chapter 1. I often go back to Romans 1 when dealing with a news analysis or looking at the news, but there is no other place that I know of that we can go back and we can actually see the process and what actually takes place but Romans 1. It says in verse 17, therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. In other words, we're looking at this, we're in faith that what we understand, what we believe, is the right way. And we're watching it, and we watch even financial, you know, any of us that have got burnt in this process, we need to understand that we need to learn certain lessons ourselves, that we don't go after what glitters. All that glitters isn't gold. It is a problem. It says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and righteousness of men that suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest to them, for God has shown it to them. For the invisible things of the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power, his Godhead. And we've only to look out at the natural world, but the people are being forced into cities. They don't see the natural world in the raw, they just see it on the television, and it's got a slant, and it's slanted continually. Even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, or they had aware of God, they didn't glorify him as God, neither were thankful, but they became vain in their own imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. I can virtually guarantee that the people that got together in Halifax back in the 1800s were God-fearing to some degree. But when we look at what's the educational system, I don't know the individuals involved in all the financial transactions. I'm sure some people do have a knowledge of God, but they have been educated in a system which is not God-fearing, which is the antithesis of God-fearing. It's interesting that let me just read something here. This is from the book The Trials of Life by David Attenborough, and it was a television series at one time. And he talks about how a bat navigates by sonar, and he pushes evolution. But I want you to just listen to what happens regarding a bat and the way in which it uses the sonar and the way in which it navigates. It talks about the swiftlets technique, which uses clicks as it goes into a cave. This is like a swallow, a bird. And it says, the swiftlets technique is crude compared to that developed by bats. Developed by bats, or created and given to bats? They have refined every aspect of the system. They've refined? What do you mean, they've refined? First, the pitch of the sound. The higher it is, the smaller the surface the echo can reveal. We can hear some bat sounds, particularly when we are young and our ears are sharp, but these are the bat's social utterances. Those that they use for navigation are so high-pitched that they are ultrasonic, far beyond the range of any human ear. Some are so high that they enable their makers, you see the twist being put on all the time, to detect the presence of a wire no thicker than a human hair stretched across their flyway. Secondly, the intensity of the sound. The louder it is, the more distant the object it can detect, and the bats produce clicks which, if translated into frequencies that we could hear, would sound as loud as a pneumatic drill. Now remember, this is coming out of their mouth, and their ears are just a few inches, inches away, a few centimetres away. This, however, causes a major complication. You better believe it does. It is so loud that were the bats to hear it, their hypersensitive ears, tuned to detect the faintest of echoes, would be seriously overloaded. This problem is dealt with by a muscle. Funny how let's ask the question, could the muscle therefore come into being by itself? You have to have the sound generating mechanism of a high frequency. You have to have the ear mechanism. You've got to have the muscle here that we're just about to look at, and the brain to determine what was going on for any of it to work. But it says the problem is dealt with by a muscle in the middle ear attached to one of the trio of tiny bones that transmits the vibrations to the eardrum, or the tubular organ in the skull that converts them into nervous stimuli. As each click is made, this muscle pulls aside the bone so that the eardrum is momentarily disconnected. It is then replaced in time to receive the echo, and this it may do more than 100 times a second in perfect synchrony with the clicks of the calls. Design or what? And yet you say that happened? All together? You can work out the statistical probability of that within DNA. Now, I've given you this before, the statistical probability of that DNA changing just precisely and leaving certain parts of the DNA alone and changing just these precise parts to get it right is 10 to the power of 2 million. That's how many possible combinations you can get out of the DNA strand. Now, 10 to the power of 2 million, as I said before, you're looking at all the atoms in the universe. Every atom in the universe is 10 to the power of 70-something. If you had every atom combining and separating every time from the Big Bang through, you come to about 10 to the power of 120. That's a figure about 3.5 feet long. But this, you keep adding zeros for 3.5 miles to come to 10 to the power of 2 million. Each zero multiplying the universes before by tenfold. These are it is an insanity. It says, thirdly, the faster the clicks are emitted, the more up-to-date information the bat will receive as it negotiates the optical obstacles in the cave and dodges through the branches and creepers of the night forest. Some bats can send out a stream of 200 clicks in a single second, each lasting only a thousandth of a second and spaced sufficiently from the others to allow each echo to be heard. Essay. It says here, if you read what it says the invisible things of him, from the creation of the world, are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and his Godhead. So they are without excuse. And it goes down progressively, showing the perversion of mind that this is actually engendered. It is a perverse, deviant mind that looks at the creation and comes up with the idea that there is no God, that there's no design. Or they see the design, they say it's a natural process. There is a designer. Statistically, what we have is impossible. It's not just impossible once over, it's impossible multifaceted ways throughout all of creation. And yet, this perverted mind developed, it says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. It got into the sexual area. They became perverted in the sexual area. It then got into, as it says, verse 28, they didn't like to retain God in their knowledge, and it is the dissemination of knowledge. It's the way these traders were educated. And these traders were educated from this basis, as Mr. Armstrong brought out back in 1980. And this basis has given rise to the understanding that everything is by survival of the fittest. It is a total different philosophy from what you find when they all got together in Halifax and came up with the Halifax Building Society. And the philosophy that we see today is getting progressively worse. And we've noticed the books that have been published, I don't know when was this, 1980 was it? It was around 1980, 70s, something like that, that book was written. It's not as bad as the more recent ones. And yet, you know, this is the problem. The traders were being taught about survival of the fittest. And what is happening now, on the other side of the article that I just read you about the Halifax, is another comment as well. And this is written by a man called George Pitcher. It says, this society has lost its grip on reason. Notice this is the same article, right in the middle of all this financial crisis. Nothing to do with the financial crisis on the surface, but it has everything to do with the financial crisis. He says, if I had a fiver for every time that somebody accused me of believing, quote, in an invisible sky fairy, unquote, I'd buy you dinner. And believe me, we'd go somewhere nice. Now let me say something, that I would probably increase that budget to a weekend in Paris because I am a creationist. I'm sorry if this sounds like a coming out. It shouldn't be the most natural thing for a person of Christian faith to say. In other words, he believes in creation. But if it's to be consistent, the Royal Society will immediately fire off a letter to this newspaper's editor demanding my dismissal. Heavens above, a child might read the column and have its mind poisoned. The Royal Society, that bastion of enlightened discourse committed to the understanding of the world in which it lived for some 350 years. And they did. They looked at, and again, you're going back into the 1800s, and they were open, and they had God-fearing men in there. Even those that believed in evolution were still God-fearing in that sense. It says it has just hounded its director of education from office for saying far less than I have. The Reverend Professor Michael Rees didn't say that he was a creationist. He merely said in a speech last week that children with a creationist upbringing should be engaged with in science lessons rather than simply dismissing them as wrong. Just because something lacks scientific support doesn't seem to me to be a sufficient reason to omit it from the science lesson, he said. There is much to be said for allowing students to raise any doubts that they have, hardly a revolutionary idea in science teaching, and doing one's best to have a genuine discussion. Hardly revolutionary, perhaps, but sufficiently heretical for the zealots of science successfully to demand his head. He had let a chink of creationism in, you see, and the new secular scientific establishment decided that he was an enemy of the state. A pusillanimous Royal Society duly therefore condemned him, because even to acknowledge the existence of creationism is to encourage decadence. In a neo-Stalinist way, creationism must be airbrushed from the picture of a world that our children see, so toxic it is to scientific truth. So they kicked him out, purely for saying, look, we need to have a discussion about this. Says the demigod of atheism, Professor Richard Dawkins, weighed in to say that he would wish to see Royal Society attack creationism with all fists flying. These are these evangelical atheists, of which Richard Dawkins and Stephen Jones are the two principal ones in this country. But again, as it says here in Romans, for the invisible things of creation are clearly seen, and it says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and they deny his eternal power and his Godhead. That's what they refuse to accept. And it is a perverted mind, it's a deviant mind that does that. It's clearly brought out, but it gets into the educational system and then goes into all other areas of society, of which one happens to be finance. It says, where did this intolerance come from? It says, like all fundamentalism, scientific bigotry, I suspect, springs from insecurity. I think he's got a very valid point. It comes from insecurity. The postmodern secular experiment hasn't carried all before it as its leaders had hoped. In other words, we've got chaos in the world. Why? Because of the teaching, because of the education, and this atheistic form of education. That has made the extremists frustrated, angry, and intolerant. And I thought that was a very interesting article. And it's interesting that it came right on the other side, that the other side from the article that was expressing what happened as far as the building society is concerned and how it changed its ethos to that of Walmart and Asda. And the change in ethos brought the collapse of the company. And yet was taken over by somebody else who was of an older school that had seen the ups and downs going through history. Now if we turn back to Isaiah chapter 5, and just remind ourselves a little bit what it says here in Isaiah 5. As I said, this is going to be a split sermon. but here in Isaiah 5, it says in verse 20, it says, "Woe to them that call evil good, and good evil, put darkness for light, and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter." They are deviant, they are perverted. Their mind and their thinking is a deviant, perverted mind. That's what Romans 1 brings out. "Woe to them that are wise in their own eyes," who is professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, as it says in Romans 1, and prudent in their own sight. "Woe to them that are mighty to drink wine, and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward." Notice, which justify the wicked for reward. And in many cases, when you're looking at the short selling idea, whereby you can sell what you don't actually own, was actually banned during the time when the last depression occurred. And it remained banned until the 1990s. And then it was allowed back in. "Which justify the wicked for reward, and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Therefore as the fire devours the stubble, and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness, their blossom shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Eternal of Hosts, despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Therefore is the anger of the Eternal kindled against his people, and he has stretched forth his hand against them, he has smitten them, the hills trembled, and the carcasses were torn in the midst of the streets. And for all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still." In other words, don't think this is going to be the end of the financial chaos. It's not. Don't think this will be the end of what is happening. Because the spiritual problems are there, you cannot have anything else but the chaos that's going to occur. Notice the context of this as well. Just turn back in chapter 5 still, in verse 8, notice what it says. "Woe to them that join house to house, that lay field to field, until there's no place that may be placed alone in the midst of the earth." Isn't it interesting that these subprime mortgages are so often on properties that are jammed, how many to an acre? 20 something to an acre? 40 to an acre? That there's some phenomenal number that they cram in there to the acre. And they put them into skyscrapers or however they... it is not the way of God. And within that context, he's saying people saying light, evil for good and good for evil. Light for dark and darkness for light. If we turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 25, we find a basic principle here in Deuteronomy 25. It says in verse 13, "You shall not have in your bag different weights, a great and a small." Now this is a fundamental principle. You do not go ahead and treat people in a different way. As it says, "You shall not have in your house different measures, a great and a small, but you will have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God will give you. For all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination to the Eternal your God." And what's been going on in the financial markets is along these lines. Turn back to Leviticus 19. Leviticus chapter 19. Here in Leviticus 19, notice what it says in verse 15. It says, "You will do no unrighteousness in judgment." In other words, the way you judge has got to be righteous. "You shall not respect the person of the poor." Now notice what it says. It's not just the wealthy, it's the person of the poor. You do not show favoritism in that direction in your judgment, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness you will judge your neighbor. So that principle is a vital principle of God. I just want to read to you a little bit from a commentary which was on the internet, commenting on a radio show. Now it is biased, it's biased in a certain direction, but it quotes certain facts which I think are quite valid to go ahead and quote, to show what happened with the subprime mortgage lending problem in the United States. Now here we have this dustbin bank that the government has come up with to shove all these instruments into this dustbin bank to kind of be taken care of by the government, and that means being taken care of by the American population, because of what? How did they get into such a mess in the first place? What was the problem? He says on his radio show today, that's Thursday, this last Thursday, Glenn Beck exposed the steps that the Democrats used to create the current crisis in the financial markets. Now let's say they are biased, they're Republican, all right? They're biased against the Democrats. But in some of the things that they bring out, it's not just the Democrats that are involved, it is the Republicans as well. And what you've got to go do is you've got to go back to the philosophy and the underlying thinking that is there, based on what it says in Romans 1, to understand what's been going on. In 1968, a Congress created Fannie Mae to foster the American dream of affordable homeownership. And since 68, Fannie Mae has helped more than 55 million families achieve the American dream of home ownership. Sounds good. Which is fine. I mean, allowing people to own their own home, that is along the lines that God certainly supports, except it does it a different way. Each family actually has a right, and every 50 years you go back to that right, that land. In 1977, the Community Reinvestment Act, the CRA, is passed by the Congress. It says, this act prohibits banks from refusing to grant mortgages in high-risk areas of cities where high default rates occur on mortgages because the poor, often a minority people living there, simply cannot pay off a mortgage. Now, is that insane or is that insane? If somebody cannot pay for a mortgage, what on earth are you doing passing legislation? And remember what it says here, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, and who is judging? The Congress was judging. You shall not respect the person of the poor. And yet what they did is they forced the banks to accept mortgages or give mortgages to people who were not meeting their criteria. They had to lean across and respect the person of the poor. They demonized and denounced banks that put red lines around high-risk areas where investment would endanger the funds of their shareholders and create financial losses for the banks. They put out propaganda that these financially rational and responsible banks are morally evil, racist institutions. It was the racism card that was applied. And it was applied by the government. As I say, once you throw away the existence of a higher power and a higher authority, your mind, having looked at the creation as it is, your mind is deviant. Your mind is that of a pervert. And once you have a perverted mind, it will be perverted in all areas of life. You cannot separate your private life from your public life. If you're a pervert, if you're a deviant, you are deviant. Your mind is working in a deviant way. And to look at the creation and say, oh, there's no God, there's no higher authority, there's no power above me that I've got to be respecting and fearing, that's a deviant mind. Read Romans 1. And it's got into the educational system, and the educational system has then been training not only the bankers, but the people in Congress, the people in government generally, and across society. And the society itself is rotten to the core, it is spiritually bereft. That's the problem. And as Mr. Armstrong said, he said, look, you've had it good for so long because God has promised. But now, because of our sins and because of going in a certain direction, the end is in sight. It's inevitable, because you're going in a certain direction. It says, in 1992, the Boston Federal Reserve Bank did a study on the CRA data and many banks, and this study claimed that many banks were discriminating against minorities. The racist practice that the study claimed to discover in this guilty banks were 1. Charging a mortgage application fee. 2. Demanding that mortgage applicants verify their claimed income. They weren't allowed to do that, to verify the claimed income. Insane. 3. Perform credit history checks on mortgage applicants. In May 1995, the scholars exposing the totally invalid study didn't stop. It says the Republican this time controlled Congress in May 1995. It didn't stop the Republican controlled Congress from May 95 from substantially revising the Community Reinvestment Act, which Democratic Bill Clinton then signed. The revised CRA put an end to this, quote, alleged bank mortgage discrimination and racism. So you can see how the screws of the government were then tightening on the banks to stop them from discriminating and being racist against people that were asking for mortgages. So the chickens have actually come home to roost, but where's it coming from? It's not coming from the government. It is coming from an educational system that have educated the people that are in the government. It's educated the people in Congress. It's educated the people in the banks. And it's produced a society which is deviant in its mindset because it's thrown God out of the picture. It says the CRA made asking for a proof of income and doing credit history checks on minority and poor applicants illegal. Credit history check? Illegal before you loan money? You shall know the unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the person of the poor. That is God's law. And they are directly flouting against God's law. In 1992 to 2000, Attorney General Janet Reno threatens to prosecute severely any bank found to be, quote, discriminating. And remember that discriminating means demanding that mortgage applicants verify their claimed income and providing credit history checks. And who was the Attorney General? Janet Reno. Again, you look at what it says in Romans 1. She, not only does she support gay rights and all the rest of the homosexual lobby, but every indication is that she is an absolute staunch lesbian herself. And the reason why I say that is because there have been certain Republicans that have accused her of many, many things, and yet have challenged her to go ahead and sue them in the lesbian area. And as I say, read Romans 1. But it doesn't start in that area. It starts in the area of denying of God. That is your deviant mind. There is your start. It's denying the eternal power and Godhead. Once you get over that initial hurdle, then you can go into everything and anything. And this is why we've got the financial crisis today. And this is also why the financial crisis will continue today. We will not have the bounce back. Or it might go back for a while, but eventually it will crumble, it will disintegrate. Because the deviant mindset, and deviant mindset hoisted, as Mr. Armstrong said all those years ago, he says, our educational system worships at the shrine of the false god of evolution, making it the foundational approach and basic concept on which all knowledge is based. Evolution is the atheist's attempted explanation of the presence of a creation without a creator. And that is one of the sins that he highlights very heavily, to say, look, the end is you know, of the promises is in sight. When we're at that particular time, and we are at that time certainly today, more so, much, much more so, than the time in 1980 when Mr. Armstrong wrote those words.